Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
A grain, all right.
Just remember that.
That's
a small bit of a needle there.
Come on, Mayo, you've
got
to get Andy Moran into the game.
Lift and back green, and now they're really roaring. And I can tell you, there won't be a cold milk to declare for at least a week.
Hello, everyone. You're very welcome to the Irish Examiner Gaelic Football Show. My name is Paul Rouse, and I'm joined by the former Armagh footballer, Oisín McConville, by the former Mayo footballer, David Clark, by the former Galway footballer and manager, Kevin Walsh, and by the sports editor of the Irish Examiner, Tony Lean. We're going to be looking at football across all the provincial championships, at the enduring shambles that is the GAA's disciplinary system, but we're going to start with what's happening between Cork and Kerry and where their Munster semi-final will be played or not played. Tony Lean, where do things stand now?
I would say, Paul, we've probably gone from three scenarios to two. The three scenarios were the games in Killarney, the games in Páirc-Uaireen, or the games in a neutral venue, and which is probably going to be the Gaelic grounds in Limerick. From what I'm led to believe at this stage, Killarney seems to be off the table, which is the most ironic thing, given that that's the actual expressed choice of the Munster Council itself. If I'm a betting man at this stage, well, I suppose it depends. The question I'd ask is how intransigent is the Cork football group right now? Because if the Cork football group, and I met one of the players literally in the last 24 hours, and I said to them, you know, are you going to go? And I got no sense whatsoever of a budge. And if that's the case, then Limerick maybe, if they concede a small bit of ground. The key to it, Paul, really is Kerry. Just like last year with the Tyrone semi-final, and that's relevant to say here, because there is still kind of a constituency in Kerry of I told you so that was kind of whispering in people's ears last August when, you know, Kerry were talking about, you know, what they would do, when people were saying, you know, you'll get no thanks for this and it's going to backfire if you actually, you know, let the game go back another couple of weeks. And they were the ones that are whispering now again, and you do this again, and you saw what happened against Tyrone last year. The Kerry executive are meeting this Wednesday evening, Paul, and they can grease the wheels to some extent by actually saying, you know what, we don't care where the game is played. We'll go to Páirc-Uaireen. We'll play the game. Fix it for Páirc-Uaireen. I think personally that's the best solution. That's easy for me to say sitting here in Cork. I'm not part of the Kerry group. But I do get the sense from Jack O'Connor, and you know Jack O'Connor, Paul, I think Jack really is of a view that the game itself is more important than the venue. I mean, there is a genuinely real possibility still that this game doesn't get played, that Cork forfeit the game, which a member of the Cork executive pointed out to me last week would be absolutely catastrophic, not even in the strikes of 2002, 2008 or 9, did Cork ever forfeit a championship game? This would be a new first and a new low if they were to do so.
And but what would bring them to forfeit the game? How would that happen?
Because you've got to appreciate where Cork football is at the moment. They have now taken a stand. They pressed the nuclear button. I don't believe they should have. I think that they were advised not to, but they still said no. We are not going anywhere. The Munster Council originally fixed this game for Páirc-Uaireen. That's what we're preparing. That's the only place we're going to play the game. That boxed them into a corner, lads. And in that scenario, there's no options left. Given the standing of the Cork footballers in the county, they now know that once they've made that decision, they can't draw back from that decision. No, they just can't draw back. They are going, I don't want to use the word ridiculed, but they are going to look really, really poor, you know, from their point of view, if they actually say, OK, we'll go to Limerick, you know, we'll go to Killarney. So really the Cork footballers are looking for either A, the Munster Council to bail them out by saying, okay, lads, you know what? Let's go. Let's play the game in Park. You're in. Kerry, are you okay with that? Or B, Kerry steps up today or after today's meeting and says, yeah, you know what? We need the game. Because you got to remember, lads, Jack O'Connor's mindset is, if we don't get the Cork game, we literally have a Munster final before we go into the All-Ireland series. And that's going to be probably against, take your pick, Clare, Tip or Limerick, realistically. And then you're into the All-Ireland series. So it's a bad scenario for Kerry. It's a bad scenario for Cork. It's a bad scenario for the Munster Council. And if you want me to go round the houses once more in terms of who's to blame for this shambles, there's a bit of blame to go around everywhere, probably except Kerry. Munster Council made a bags of the announcement. Once they said Park Éireann, why did they say Park Éireann? That's the first thing. I've obviously discussed the Cork players, and you don't really want to go back to the whole Ed Sheeran, Parky Queeve, Cork executive scenario. I mean, that ship has sailed at this stage. The concerts are going ahead. And we've seen, obviously, with other sports, Cork aren't the only ones to suffer in that regard. So you're looking for the Munster Council or Kerry, I feel, to bail the footballers out of a hole.
There is a precedent here, and it's the Newbridge or Nowhere line taken by the Kildare footballers, Kildare GA board, when they were due to play Mayo in a qualifier, and it was said that Newbridge was too small. But Tony, what I think is different about that is that there was a broad-based surge of popular support within the county of Kildare for their footballers, where there's a really tight identification between the players and the supporters. There is no sense of a popular swell of support behind Cork footballers here.
No. And you see, that's what I was saying. Unfortunately, in terms of where the Cork footballers are at, the hurlers probably did them a small bit of a favour in one respect on Sunday, because everybody down here now this week is loading in on the hurlers. But at the same time, I don't think the rating of the of Cork football in the county has been this low for quite some time. It's just the perfect storm. Obviously, you have Keith Ricken having to take a step back for health reasons as well from the management, so he's no longer part of this process. I think the executive in Cork have met with the players. They've said, go to Limerick. You know, I mean, do the right thing. Like, the right thing, by the way. The right thing, absolutely. And I've been panned publicly and on social media for saying this, but I say it again. I think the chances of beating Kerry this year are as long as odds of as they've been for a long time. So why didn't Cork go to Killarney this year? Give it their best shot. And I'd be interested with the three lads have been there and done that better than I have. But they had the guarantee then of the next 2 years in Parky Queeve. This Cork team probably isn't going to be in as good a spot in 2022 as it should be in 23 or 24. So go down to Killarney, try to get a performance, try to get something to build on. And then when you're better placed, you've Kerry and Parky Queeve for the next 2 years. What's not to like about that? That surely was handing them a good deal on a plate. And their response to that is, no thanks, not interested. The game is in Park Éireann or we don't play it.
Kevin, if you were the Cork football manager, where would you play this game? What would you be prepared to do?
I think, to be honest, I think Tony hit the nail on the head there. I mean, the last time I was on the show, he asked me about this, and I said, at the time, it was quite new, the venue, and I did say at the time, I don't think the venue is Cork's problem at the minute. I think the problem is getting their act together and getting their own house in order. So, like Tony has said there, absolutely, if there's a deal on the table for 2 years, I can't see why they can't do that. I mean, Cork did bring in the concert, it's there, so that's the reason they haven't got the pitch. And like that, I do think they need to get their house in order to be able to perform. And I do agree, I would always have said, and I always thought that there's certain Munster finals or Munster games where you'd expect a big performance from the underdog and it might be turned over. But I don't see that happening this year. I was at the Cork games, so at the Cork Galway game, I just think they're way behind where they should be. The Division 2 was, what I saw this year, was very, very poor and weak. So, and again, they just hung on the last day for a last-minute kick. So for me, I would, like Tony, I was saying, go to Clarendy, get the game, play there, get your next 2 years. And, you know, at the end of the day, the Parky Quee was from the Cork making anyway. So, yeah, I'd have gone to Clarendy, to be honest.
David, you played for Mayo in that famous Newbridge or Nowhere match. Did the run up to that game have any impact on preparations, or is it largely irrelevant?
I think probably for us it was probably irrelevant. Now, we didn't perform, but I think maybe for Kildare, I suppose once you have a cause, you can definitely build something within the group. Looking at Cork, I suppose you said, you know, they're at a low ebb. Their new manager this year trying to build something. They weren't going particularly well. They were trying to probably grasp at something. This could be our cause. We could try and, you know, take something out of it. But it probably comes from the leadership. Like, where was the decision made? Was it the players or was it from the management? I know in ourselves, in situations like that, I don't think we'd have any say in it. When I was playing, it was, you were told by the management, this is what's our situation. That's the leader of the group. And you were going with that. But yeah, it's quite a mess. I suppose you said the interesting thing is the community or the county doesn't seem to be behind them. I didn't see anybody in the news. I didn't see any murals yet on any walls. So it's it's quite quiet. But from Kerry's side as well, you know, very quiet. I think they'll play the game wherever it's eventually fixed for. I don't think they have a major problem where it's going to be played, because, you know, I think getting that game, as you said, is probably the most important thing for them. And they'll be quite confident, I suppose, wherever they play, that they're going to get a victory. But it's a mess, as we say.
I think if I was Kerry, I'd just say, let's go to Parky Rin. I think that's what I'd say. Go in and play it. I can't see a way in which they lose the match. As controversies go, though, I think it pales beside the other news from this week, which is the Armagh players, Stephen Campbell, Kieran Mackin and Aidan Nugent, clear to play in the Ulster Championship match against Donegal next Sunday. Previous to this, the proposed suspension for another Armagh player, Rian O'Neill, was also thrown out. Now, Stephen Campbell, Kieran Mackin and Aidan Nugent had been suspended for contributing to a melee in a league match, also against Donegal a couple of weeks ago, and had been given a one-match ban. Their appeal to the GAA's Central Appeals Committee, one of the great CAC, CCC, CHC committees that exist. So the CAC threw it out. And what gives this turn of events particular spice is that two Donegal players, Neil McGee and Oran McFadden-Ferry, had also been suspended after the same match, also for contributing to a melee, but they accepted their suspensions. Oisín, what's going on?
I think you've explained it really well there, Paul. I think it's obvious that the Donegal two obviously felt that they were guilty of something, so no point in appealing. Whereas the Armagh lads obviously felt that what they were suspended over was unjust. So if you feel as if something's unjust, then you appeal against it. And
the two Donegal lads were fighting with each other, were they?
Yeah, I'm not 100% sure who they were fighting with, Paul, because I watched four different videos of it, and I can't really see any punches being thrown. So I don't know when you're talking about contribution to a melee. But if I can go,
but if you're saying they were guilty, Hold on now. You were saying they were guilty. Felt they were guilty. Were they guilty of wrestling with each other? What were they guilty of?
No, I said that the Donegal lads themselves must have felt they were guilty of something whenever they didn't appeal. Okay, so that's quite different. But can we roll back a little bit, and can we roll back to last week and to Rian getting off?
Yeah, so, well, yeah. Do you want to explain what happened there?
Well, I'll explain this to you, right? I'll explain this to you. And Tony, I really would like Tony to come in on this, okay? Because I don't want to be factually wrong, okay? But I, in my time watching Gaelic football and going about disciplinary rooms and disciplinary committees and hearing about how different people have got off and different things got, I've never heard of the CCCC watching video evidence without an appeal going in. And that's what happened this time. And that break of protocol really would annoy me. And the reason why it would annoy me is that if it hasn't ever happened before, why did they go after one player in that situation? And I think it was orchestrated. I think the row was orchestrated in the first place. Okay, so I didn't think that happened by accident. I have a couple of different versions.
Who orchestrated?
I think Donegal orchestrated the row.
And in the same way that Tyrone orchestrated the row previously in the athletic grounds?
Well, it wasn't a row. That was something that happened during the game. That was something that happened. That was to do with, like, I had a comments on this at the time. I wanted that stamped out because somebody got Jarly Oakbourne's in a headlock, and it was right beside just where there was a concrete step running across. And I just thought it was very, very dangerous. And I didn't think there was any need to suspend four Tyrone lads at that time, but I thought there was one lad who should have been suspended. And after that, then, we get to this situation, okay? So we have a situation with Dublin and Kerry, you know, where it's glossed over. We have a bit of a laugh about it. Then we go up to Ulster. I think, as I say, it's orchestrated. I think that Armagh fell into the trap and wanted to get off the pitch as quickly as possible. And the two, no disrespect to Neil McGee, but Neil McGee probably wasn't going to play a major role in the game anyway. Or McFadden Ferry, as much as he's an important player to Donegal, hasn't really played that much championship football in the last number of years. So Donegal were trying to pull a fast one again, in that they were saying, "Ah, listen, you know, we'll take the high moral ground here. You know, we'll accept their suspensions, knowing that they weren't really going to hurt them that badly anyway." And yet Armagh were going to be faced with three suspensions and then four, and the fourth one is the one that annoys me. And the reason why it annoys me, and I know people are going to say, "Well, it's your nephew, you have skin in the game, and all that." There, that's nothing to do with it. The thing that annoys me is that protocol was broken, that they would go and look at that video knowing that that's not the way they should have went about it. So in case people are...
Can I ask a question on that, actually, just to come across for 1 second? What did the video show that Rean did?
I don't know what they've seen. I don't know. I can't tell you what the CCCC's seen. I don't know the answer.
Not easy
to
say that. Well done. So this is quite partisan, Oisin. The way you're coming at this.
I have no choice. It's not something I'm just, you know, I'm not just throwing this out off the top of my head. I mean, like there was a serious social media campaign highlighting one player after that game. Okay, and it was all to do with Rean and what Rean did and how he, and all of those things. Now, so you're telling me that the guys who are sitting on that committee, okay, are now being swayed by social media. So what they did was, oh, well, tell you what, listen, lads, there's a lot of things being said about Rean O'Neill and what he done. Let's go and look at the video. Went, looked at the video and suspended him, which is not how you go. That's not how you go about things. And I want to ask Tony, in all of his time dealing with committees, has he ever seen a committee do something like that completely out of, as I say, they didn't follow the protocol that had been followed for whatever number of years that committee is in place?
Okay, well, number one there, Oisin, you're confusing me with someone who knows something of how the inner workings of these committees operate. Nobody does. Number two, what I would say is, you know, we can say with any degree of certainty, by the way, that the decision was made on the basis of social media. I would think, in fairness, that's a long stab. No, I would say, because I saw the incident at the time. And I think if I can bring it forward to something that Fergal Logan said last weekend, which I think is actually very relevant in this conversation. The whole definition of contributing to a melee, and you got to remember, you know, what Fergal Logan's professional background is in this, in terms of his ability to parse and analyse things. Contributing to a melee, Fergal Logan made the point in relation to the Conor McKenna sending off last weekend, that are we now getting to a point where guys who go in and actually try to pull lads out of a row are actually being done and suspended? And he's arguing, obviously, McKenna was the case. Now, who was doing what the day between Donegal and Armagh? You know, you have to say that's obviously going to be something that's going to be scrutinised in terms of video, not in terms of social media. You have to say that, Oisin. That's the first instance. Agreed?
I wonder how you would go to that video and pick out one player. That's all I'm saying.
Well, but isn't that, I think...
Let's come back to the three players, though, who are named by the referee.
Right, okay. Well, in their report.
How have they got off, and where does that leave the referee's authority?
I am not sure how they got off, okay? I'm not sure how they got off. And
I'll suggest that Armagh have good lawyers.
I would hope so. But I would suggest that I was surprised that those players got off. Very surprised that those players got off. Not because of what they've done, but because I would have expected that committee to back up the referee in whatever way they could.
Now,
they probably got off on a technicality, but I don't know the answer to that. I know Ryan got off on a technicality.
Yeah, because of the sequencing of the referee not being contacted before the video footage being used. Is that more or less the logic that I've heard explained?
More or less, yeah.
And I believe
this is what I'm led to believe, and I thought Tony may have been able to back me up, but I believe that has never ever happened before.
Yeah, I agree. I don't think that has happened, but I think there's something really interesting at issue here, and that is the four Tyrone players that were suspended after the incidents with Armagh in the Athletic Grounds earlier in the year. The referee that day was David Goff, and the committee stood behind his decision. And Paddy Nealon is the referee in the last game, and I think he's been abandoned here. And I also think I'm not sure I disagree that there's an orchestrated campaign by Donegal. I haven't seen the evidence of that, but what I will say is, if there's to be natural justice here, and if you're getting those players off, then the two Donegal players should be free to play next Sunday.
No, I don't agree.
Why?
Because Donegal, again, were trying to pull a fast one. They were trying.
No,
to
you can't off. Say
they
that, Oisín.
No, they were.
No, you can't. 100%. That's just speculation.
It's not speculation. It's obvious. It's obvious. They were trying to take the high moral ground. They were trying to say, listen, you know, we'll take our suspensions because we... You know,
they took responsibility for their actions.
No, they absolutely didn't. They've appealed more decisions than anybody else in the country. And I'm telling you now, that's what they did. They took the high moral ground. And I don't know. I don't care what way this makes me look. I'm telling you now that I know the sequence of events and the way it happened. I seen the video footage, and I didn't say an orchestrated campaign. I says the row was orchestrated, and it was, and I'm absolutely convinced of that. And nothing will change my mind. By Donegal.
And this is Kevin, can I ask you, if you were the manager of Armagh or the manager of Donegal, would you have appealed either of those groups of suspensions?
To be honest, Paul, like, I'm listening to Oisín there in particular, and he's obviously gone through all this 100 times. He seems to be pretty clear in what he's saying. So I have barely seen this. I've seen it on television once. I don't know exactly what went on with the players, but I mean, you'd want to be very, very strong or have people in high places to get you off, from my opinion, because anything you've ever done, the referee's backed up normally. So, you know, I don't know enough about the incident to actually answer your question, Paul, but from a manager point of view, you'd want to be very strong in what's going to back you up to get off in any kind of objection to what's handed out to your team.
Technicalities is usually how... players get off, and it's usually if somebody's number's wrong or if it's not written in Irish or some of this sort of stuff, and like, it's absolute nonsense. I know it's nonsense, but to be honest with you,
like, for me, this is falling back to something I brought up over 2 years ago, and I keep bringing up. One referee and four linesmen who are qualified referees standing like plikes with a flag in their hand doing one job. Now, you look at American football, you look at anything, the white flag comes in if a referee sees something. It doesn't have to be the main man. For me, the GAA is all about, it's my turn this Sunday. You stay quiet on the sideline. You'll have your day in the sun next week. This has to be brought forward. You've got very, very well, I would say, experienced referees on sidelines doing absolutely nothing, bare waving the flag. It's crazy. All this type of stuff. You look at the amount of stuff that's gone off the ball, right? And people will give, like, to David Goff, clap in the back for seeing two or three things on the far side of the field. What about all the stuff he missed? Now, you have to have somebody that's going to look at us after the stuff that's consistent, not just a referee saying, oh, fair play to me, saw this. What about the 100 things that went on at the same time? So all of a sudden, that referee is changing momentum for a game where he shouldn't have that power. For me, there's enough people on a sideline that are qualified to make calls and make the call, not going through the referee, make that call, and you won't be long cleaning up the act of all this type of stuff. So for me, the GA has to look at the bigger reason why this is happening. And for me, it's down to the referees not being given the job on the sidelines.
And can I just say one more thing on that? And this is 100% not having a go at referees. The amount of decisions last weekend were made from 50 and 60 yards away from the play was unbelievable. There's no ref. I don't care how fit you are, how much ground you can cover. You're not going to be able to see the modern day lads when they break. There's absolutely no chance that referees are going to be able to stay with them. And like I've said for 4 or 5 years now that it's high time we had two referees, one for each side of the field. And you get laughed out of town because the first thing people will say is, well, you've got four umpires and you've got a third official or fourth official, and you've got two linesmen, but they're not contributing. They're not contributing in the way they should contribute, and exactly the point that Kevin's after making.
But it's a two-stepper, though, isn't it? It's what happens on the field, and then it's what happens afterwards in the process. And the current process is a product of what happened in 2004 when there were two high-profile sending off. Rory O'Connell, the Westmead midfielder, appealed his sending off and suspension to the High Court, got an injunction, was able to play in the Leinster final, and then the Leinster final replay, in which Westmead won their only Leinster Senior Football Championship. And that same year, John Mullan got sent off playing for Waterford against Cork, and Waterford were duly beaten by Kilkenny in an All-Ireland semi-final by a couple of points, and John Mullan hadn't gone to the High Court despite pressure to do it. And then a new system is constructed, which led to the CCC, the CCH, the CHC, sorry, and the CAC, and ultimately leading on to the Disputes Resolution Authority, which, in my view, lost all authority in 2015 when Dermot Connolly was allowed play in the replay for Dublin against Mayo. And if anybody wants to understand how really brutal that decision was from the DRA, they should read what David Rennick, who was the dissenting voice on a 2-1 decision, said about that decision at the time and afterwards. It was a stunning decision to allow him play in that. Actually, David, I was just wondering, do you remember, like, that was the night before the replay he was cleared. Do you remember any sense around that at the time?
Small bit of talk, but I can't remember overly thinking about it beforehand. But obviously, he had a major impact on proceedings as the day went. Yeah. Look, everybody wants to see the best players playing. That's a given. But, like, I don't know. I suppose the organisation is caught in between many ways, between professionalism, being a body out there trying to do things right, showing examples to youngsters. Like, it's caught in so many angles. But, like, as it's happening now, it's like technicalities is just unbelievable that so many things are getting off. Like, you're leaving, as it's been said there, you're leaving referees and some of their decisions and rules, you know, you're leaving them out to dry. I know there's a serious shortage of referees in Mayo. Going up the levels then, obviously, there's complaints about referees and their quality, but, like, it's a hard job. And if you're supposedly being protected by your organization, and then all of a sudden this technicality keeps on being allowed to be an option to let people out of. And in fairness, we can say what we want, whether they were serious or not, it doesn't look good in the game, those type of incidents, whether it was instigated by Donegal or whether it was a spur of the moment thing, it doesn't look good. And I think it definitely drifts down throughout the game. Like, it's and then the dissenting voices from, I'm involved with different underage teams now. When you can see that basically the referees are have made a bad decision, like it's always a bad decision. And it comes over, they're always wrong. I think it doesn't do anything for the game. Now, I don't know, once you could see things going to the High Court and stuff like that, I think the whole game that time, it changed a lot of things. It basically said that there's no there's no rule. We keep on fighting everything. I remember a number of years ago, there was rules brought in about the third man in, like, to a melee. And I remember, I think Tom Parsons got caught one night. We were down in Kerry, and he was, I think he was one of the first men he was made an example of. But then all of a sudden, that'll disappear for a few months, or maybe a few years. And then, I think, was it there the last day? Again, it's brought back up, so they decided to start using it again. Will he get off? You know, he may get off again. I don't know. I think there's a huge bigger picture, and it's hard to know where it's going to go. But I think in the end, for that game, I think it's changed the whole dynamic of the game, and I think it'll probably be a better game because of the players that are released to play, and I think it may change the dynamic in terms of Armagh's favour. But it's again, it's a major talking point of the GAA, and it's something that needs to be cleaned up.
Though, I think it does allow Armagh have a huge, like, allows Armagh have much better players on the field, but at the same time, it's something that could be a rallying call for Donegal, or is that irrelevant?
Yeah, I suppose they've got a cause. I suppose it's the first of the day, but I think I definitely think Armagh getting them players back, they're real key players for them. I think this is the game they've been targeting all year. They never give up on the chance of them being involved, so I think they've been probably planning towards this. I think it'll give them a real boost. They're a team that's developing nicely, but yeah, I suppose, yeah, Donegal get that cause as well, but I'd be tipping Armagh.
I just ask one question, Paul, on this. I wonder, will we ever get to a point in the GAA when you're watching a game and you see a red card and you can say with any degree of certainty that that player is going to miss the next important game? I can say that when I see someone sent off in the Premier League, when I see someone sent off in rugby, I can say with a certainty, okay, he's out for the next day. He's going to be a big miss. I wonder, will we ever get to that point in the GAA? And if we don't, which we can't, why won't we?
There is a great cultural tradition within the GAA of the objection as well. If you go back through the decades, the amount of matches that were won in committee rooms and decided in committee rooms are quite sensational in terms of the number. I don't think it's quite as bad as it was. Oisin, do you now think that Armagh will beat Donegal?
Yeah, I think getting those players off, I think, look at Kieran Macken, it's widely known, probably won't play in the game. He's got a pretty serious injury. But Aidan Nugent, you know, after rain, I suppose you depend on him big time for scores. Stephen Campbell just gives everybody a lift coming off the bench, has done, and is an absolute key player for Armagh. But yeah, I think it leaves the game pretty much 50-50.
Have you lost faith in Donegal?
Yeah, I thought Donegal 4 years ago were the team that could come and dominate. I don't think they've brought the players through at the pace that they could have. Probably think that they stuck with a few of the older boys maybe just a little bit too long. And those players who have come through haven't really been given the opportunity to blossom. I see you were Oisin Gallen, who I thought was one of the next big things as far as Ulster football is concerned. I see he looks as if he's not fit again. I think there's a real question mark, and they'll be questioning themselves. I don't think they've become a bad team overnight, but they just have an inability to win the big games, and that has happened for the last 4 years now. And you could say that they're a little bit like Kerry in that respect, in that they still have, even though they've proven a lot of things, they've won a fair degree of big games. They've won their Ulster Championships, but it really came to the crunch. They haven't been able to do it. So hopefully that is continued at the weekend.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
David, when Mayo were lining up to play Donegal in matches, what were you trying to do to get at them, to stop them when they were attacking and then to expose them in the back? What did you have plans?
I suppose it's probably a slightly different team at the moment, but maybe going back, the last big game that both Mayo and Donegal played was that game in Castlebar.
Qualifier 3 years ago, yeah.
Yeah. Was it Super 8 or something?
Super 8, sorry, yeah, Super 8.
Yeah. I think there's a lot of pressure on us. We probably weren't going great. That was probably another one of those games. You're going back to the years, Donegal, it was their time. They were after putting up a good, I think, performance at the draw with Kerry, or the a week or two before that. Like, you know, they were right in the mix. They were being talked highly up. But it was in Castlebar. I remember it was a rocking atmosphere. Jeez, it was one of those days that you were. I think I was injured. I wasn't tagged, but massive atmosphere. I suppose, like, Mayo played the way they play. High intensity, high pressure, try and tackle up high. I remember that day particularly, they tried to bypass midfield. Donegal were quite strong around the middle that time. Aidan O'Shea matched up against Michael Murphy, tried to nullify him. Did well on that day. We probably rode our luck as well. There was a penalty and different incidents. But I remember, yeah, we went long with kick out, tried to bypass probably midfield, which was something different for Mayo. It was a new kind of tactic, something we hadn't done a whole lot. And that worked. But, like, it's interesting watching Donegal the last number of years. Like, they have actually brought forward a number of, you know, good players. But if you watch them, and it's a good thing to say about certain teams, you can tell the way they're coached, or you can see what they're trying to do. But it doesn't always work out for them. They're you know, quite slow coming up the pitch off the shoulder. Sometimes they don't mind even letting the team retreat, and then they'll start developing. There was a bit of light, I suppose, if you watch the Donegal game against Dublin in the league. A bit more space, bigger pitch, nicer day. You could see them playing a bit more, you know, kicking football, getting a bit more space. But that seems to happen to every team that plays in Croke Park. It's like a different game of football. I don't think you can read a whole lot on the league. I think, you know, it can be, the weather can play, you know, it can play an awful impact on games and, you know, performances. But I'm not sure about these provincial venues either. I think Donegal might be a bit more suited if they get into a bigger pitch, faster pitch. Weather may be a factor this weekend again. But they do have players that can kick scores from distance. And that is something that isn't always... with a lot of teams, I know ourselves and Mayo wouldn't be one of our attributes, but if they have that, and they get a high percentage of those, you know, it keeps them in any game. But they have certain players that are, it's hard to know are the scene. Like Jamie Brennan is a player. There's times he absolutely flipping, you know, ruins teams, but sometimes then you don't see him in games, or he's not maybe deemed as a starter. He brings them something different. But again, like, there's a lot of players, we'll probably talk about Galway later on, but like, some fellas I know from playing, when you see Michael Murphy at the edge of the square, he definitely brought a different dynamic. And is he going to be left in there long enough? Does he have to do more work out the pitch? And he ends up maybe doing a lot of hard work. Whereas if he gets the right time in there and he gets maybe the right ball, I know Armagh are probably going to counter that, but it's it can change the dynamic of games, you know. They probably do a bit of luck as well, I think. The last couple of games, although they've lost them, there was periods in all those games they could have won them, you know?
Yeah, they were tight. Is Damien Comer one of those people who, if you see them in the full forward line, that, you know, it has that Michael Murphy type effect?
That's the man I'm thinking. Like, he's dangerous. Like, in fairness, when you see him running with the ball, like, he's very hard to stop. But a lot of it is he's outside the 45 and he's cutting across. And in fairness, he'll beat two or three players. But, he's got this haymaker of a swing. I've seen it down through the years, and it comes into the square and he's getting this punch over his head. And I think he's seen it two or three times in the league last year, and it's definitely going back through the years, and one of them are going to hit the net someday. But he's definitely an animal. But look, the game
Who will pick him up for Mayo against Galway?
Yeah, it may go to who, first of all, who's going to pick up Shane Walsh, I suppose. And then, I go back to who's going to be fit, first of all, for Mayo is going to be a major thing. So you're going to have legs on Shane Walsh. So that's probably going to be Paddy Durkin or Oisín Mullen, I suppose, if the two of them are fit, you have a great thing. I don't know, would Pádraic O'Hara or maybe Lee Keegan may wait in the full back line with him? could be, you know, strength wise, but he does tend to roam, so it's interesting. But I know there's probably going to be the big question is who's going to be fit for Mayo, and then can they work around that?
So Steve, who's in and who's out?
Jeez, once you're away from it, you don't ask too many questions anymore. You don't get too many answers, maybe, should I put it. But I think there's a hope that Paddy Durkin is going to be fit. James O'Connor is going to be fit. You'd be hoping maybe Oisin Mullen. I'm not sure other than that, what's the situation. But I know Jordan Flynn is definitely supposed to be out. He seems to have picked up a bad injury, you know.
At the end of the league final.
The last couple of
minutes. And Kevin, will Galway beat Mayo on the weekend?
Do you know, Paul, I suppose the few weaknesses that have shown up in both teams in the last few weeks have been the full back line. So we're talking about Michael Murphy and Damien Comer. Will they be left exposed? I think Dave mentioned about Mayo pressing high up the field and stuff. I'm not so sure that your team, David, is as good now as it was 3 or 4 years ago at pushing up front. You had a very fit Kevin McLaughlin. You had Killian O'Connor on the field. You had, what do you call the full forward there? You had three or four. They just were very, very good.
You had Andy Moore able to do a bit of work as well. Andy Moore, players across the line able to work.
And actually Doherty's the guy I'm thinking of. Those guys were really, really aggressive in stopping backs coming out. So I just noticed in the last few games the Mayo fellas up front aren't as aggressive as that, which means the team are getting out maybe 5 or 6 seconds quicker. And that leaves your full back then exposed. So if you saw O'Hara with Clifford and stuff, I don't think you get any protection whatsoever. Again, if Galway can get out quick enough, if Mayo do a high press, they could do damage. Damien Comer could do damage regardless of who's been on him. But I would say I don't think Galway can afford to leave their own back isolated. I think every time they've done that against Mayo in the last 2 years, they've beaten them out the gate. So look, it's going to be, I do expect the Galway will go tight at the back. I was at the Clare match in Tuam. It was 1-2 at each at halftime. And it was just on about 15, it was actually 15 behind the ball the first 15 minutes behind, and I don't mean behind the ball, behind the halfway line. And that was Galway, that's how Galway started playing against Clare. So maybe they're getting ready for Mayo. I don't see them going to leave Mayo themselves exposed at the back. But likewise, something has turned up in the Mayo defence at the minute that they're not as good stopping the ball coming out. So it's really hard to call, Paul, to be honest. It really is really hard. I think the injuries David spoke about, that's going to be huge for Mayo to get those boys back in, because, you know, if Damien Comer and Shane Welcher are stopped, where's the rest of them going to come from? So other guys will have to step up. And, you know, it's a relatively young Galway team. They're not proven leaders yet. You talk about Donegal, the Frank McGlynns and the Gallaghers of this world are gone out Donegal at the minute. And you can see it a mile away. I know they're not getting over the line, but there's reasons for that. Their leaders aren't there. While they can shoot from far distances, it's just the guys that goes in the trenches. I don't see it from the goal of that 3 years. I know we all hear about, you can see their coach and this and that, but it's time for them to move up the gear. And I don't see it happen at the minute. But back to Mayo Galway. If Galway don't protect their back line, Mayo could do awful damage. But I expect they will.
Oisin, how do you see it?
Well, first of all, it's a game looking forward to, because just like the boys outlined, I mean, there's a number of different ways in which these teams can go about it. I actually thought that the Derry game was fairly good practice, you know, as far as Galway were concerned. I thought they played that game really, really well, because I actually thought that defensively they looked a lot better than they did without taking too much away from how they operated up front. I think Mayo are going to be reliant on, like, Damon O'Connor's the big question mark over him. Like, if he's not fit, like, that's a major plus for Galway. I think Mayo are going to have to slightly tweak things and change things. You look at the Tyrone game towards the end of that game, you look at how much ball they kicked away. Kevin McLaughlin kicked away, you know, 4 or 5 balls, one after the other, trying to get the ball into the full forward line. They're probably just not at that stage at the minute where you have that option of using that much long ball into the full forward line, or even any sort of ball into the full forward line. And I think at the moment, Mayo should just rely on mainly on just numbers coming from defence, the likes of Dorkin and the likes of Keegan breaking the lane. So Matthew Ruan, I think that's where their strengths lie. And I think you know, Galway are going to be in a great position if Mayo maintain this thing that they have to kick the ball into the four lane, and I'm all for that. I'm all for mixing it up a little bit because it keeps the other team honest. But I don't think Mayo really have that option at the minute, and those options are few and far between. So I think it depends a lot on how many times Mayo give the ball away in the final third if they're to win this game. I actually think Mayo will win the game because I do think they have enough players who can come from the middle and come from the half back line and get scores for them. But I think, you know, they're relying a lot on Ryan O'Donoghue up front. And there's a good possibility that he could be nullified. And if he is, then there's a massive onus on the players coming from elsewhere. But, you know, when I look, as I say, that Tyrone game sort of highlighted it for me, you know, with 10 minutes to go in the game, only looked like one winner. You know, and they started to change things and started to try to hit the full forward line a bit earlier. And that just wasn't working for them. So I think just very, very patient. Maybe towards the end of the game, Galway have to come out and play, and then you've got opportunity to get in behind them. But I think this is a game where Mayo have to revert back to huge energy and their big players coming from the back and kicking scores.
So I agree with a lot of that, and I take what David said earlier about not relying too much on league form. But I was at the league finals, and I know Mayo were short, but they were really poor. And in the first game between Galway and Roscommon, I thought what Galway did really well against Roscommon, when Roscommon tried to run the ball, I thought Galway got back quite well. And as you said, Kevin, got a lot of players back, as they did against Clare, and slowed up Roscommon really seriously. And where Roscommon had joy, Roscommon have brilliant forwards. And where Roscommon had joy was when they got the ball in quickly to their forwards and managed to take on the Galway full back line, which was in the Menyaz every time the ball went in pretty quickly. But Mayo's inside forwards are not as good as Roscommon's are, I don't think, as things stand. And I agree with you, Oisin, that Mayo have to run it, but I think Galway are well set up to deal with it. I've a feeling that Galway might just shade this one. And it is though again a tight game. And the first game in Castlebar, what's the feeling like in Mayo, David, after last year's All Ireland final? Is there an urge to go again, or is the general sense in the county, is there a hangover from that loss?
Yeah, strange in some ways. Like I think getting to the final last year was an amazing achievement, I think, from the year before, the turnover of players, the development of the squad. But afterwards, there's a feeling around the place that we didn't perform on the day. One that, again, that was, you know, it nearly hurts sometimes in some people's minds more than other ones, that it was one that we should have won, you know, could have won, that maybe Tyrone aren't a Dublin of a number of years ago. That was an All-Ireland. But, like, if you step back from it, and myself being involved in the squad up to not so long ago, I think the work that was done to get that far was amazing. Things are a bit subdued this year. In funny ways, they were scraping a few wins in the league earlier on, probably built up a bit of expectation. The last couple of rounds, obviously, probably a lot of things hit home. But I think there's a really settled management. There's a lot of experienced players there. You can put a spin on it that our game is probably based on, you know, high press and energy, as you said. If that's a small bit off, as Kevin said, all of a sudden the ball is getting out that bit quicker. All of a sudden you're not getting a bit of cover back, and next thing you're destroyed. And on the flip side of that, without some of your real key players with real engines, real pace, we're not the same animal going forward. So that's some of the players I was missing. So look, you can spin Anton every way. Like, looking at Galway, like, I suppose you're thinking, are they in real pressure this year? Third year of a management team that swapped things around with coaches, S&C. They're, again, I think they wanted to win that league final and they didn't. There's going to be question marks there in their own heads. I think they've definitely become a lot more steady. I think it was funny there for a few years. I think even in Kevin's time, those players coming and going from the panel, you don't quite see that with Mayo. They're very settled. You don't see fellas walking away from it. fellas that are there a long time or fellas that are there new, they all want to be there. You know, they all believe in the project, whatever's trying to go on. They all believe that there's an opportunity there to...
Is there still belief in Mayo? Is there broader belief in James Horan in Mayo?
I think some people will say that that's not there as much as it was a number of years ago, but being a player on the ground or being someone that was there a number of years ago, I think it's definitely there from the players. And that's probably the most important thing. Obviously, this weekend is going to be a huge test after the league final. But then, funny enough, I was thinking about it. If they wear down some of these players and they didn't get the result, I don't think it'd be the end of the world for them, because the qualifiers, I think it's the same amount of games. You might have an extra few weeks to get some of these lads a bit fitter, get some of these lads back. The reality is, without some of these marquee players, Paddy Durkin's pace, Oisín Mullins' pace, maybe Dermot O'Connor, probably not the same team. You know, every team has got three or four players that are, you know, nearly indispensable. You need them. You need them to be able to be at your best. And maybe that league final could be a marker in the season, kick everything on, ramp up that intensity from being around the camp. Like, basically, the game is based on intensity. If you get that up to 80-90% of your max, you have an opportunity to compete. I know there's talk about tactics and you need a second game plan and a third game plan. You can have all the game plans, but if you don't have that intensity, especially with Mayo, everything can drop. And it's been seen down through the years. You know, we come back into the pack with teams, you know, we play sometimes at their level. But I think, would have been a new day in McHale Park. I think the pitch is a bit bigger. It's going to be a bit faster. It's something they've definitely been targeting. I think I won't say they trained hard during the league, but I don't think they eased off towards the latter stages of the league once they were safe. I think, and it's a really unfortunate thing that the league final was so close to the first round of championships. You know, it nearly devalues the league final, because, you know, the be all and end all for Galway and Mayo was probably this game. And
Yeah. There was one eye on this. And one final question on the Mayo team. For Sunday, would you play Aidan O'Shea?
Me? Yeah, I definitely would. Yeah.
Where would
yeah,
you play him?
I think he'd play around different areas. I'd like to see him probably maybe start centre forward. I think he'd go into full forward. He's done a lot of damage in the past against Galway. But as the game progresses, like, he's one of the fellas that normally would get back maybe to be that extra bit of help. Again, Galway midfield as well. There is probably more mobile midfields out there. You know, he might match up okay against somebody, whereas there's other games maybe it mightn't suit for him. Yeah, I definitely play him. I think he brings a lot to the team.
Would you play him,
everybody's
Kevin? Would you play him?
David knows a lot more about him than I do, but I put it to you. When I came into Galway first, Aidan would be a massive threat. And like David said, they're full forward, very, very hard to handle. But at the same time, when you've got a system put around him, and you put him in full forward, I wouldn't see a major threat at all in him, and I haven't seen for the last number of years. I know Kevin McStay was roaring and shouting about they found a place for Aidan O'Shea when they beat Galway by 20 points in Tomb Stadium 3 or 4 years ago. That's because Galway didn't leave any help at the back. So again, you know, he was full forward the following day against Tyrone and done nothing. So for me, I'm not so sure I'd play him. And if I was playing him, I think Dave made a valid point. I would play him midfield on Sunday if I was playing him. I think he may well suit Paul Conroy. Paul Conroy has been playing shooting very well. But I think if, you know, he could well suit the midfield on Sunday. But, you know, I think he could be a massive impact. I think 10 minutes when the team isn't expecting him on the pitch, he can cause huge damage. But if he starts, I think you can't protect against him. We'll go back to the other side of it. You spoke about the turnover players. Like, you know, Mayo have had a serious turnover in the back. Like, Keith Higgins has gone. Colin Boyle has been injured and he's obviously not getting any younger. He's gone, right? So again, you talk up front and Kieran Connor's just back. So there's Andy Moran is gone. There's a big turn. But those players, in fairness, they were ready to go. If you know what I mean? They were in their 30s. Like, for what the worrying thing for me, we saw Adrian Varley at the weekend against Sligo. You know, Ian Burke, Michael Daly, Declan Kine, Owen Kern. You know, you name all those players, there's none of them in their 30s. And like, I just hope that the team that's there now are able to step up, because you need a massive panel to be able to go. But so, you know, so for me, and I don't know enough about the young Galway players then, but Sunday's going to be a massive test for these guys now. As David said, they're 3 years together. They need to be getting this victory. And, you know, it's a day for them to prove that they're ready to step up to the big game. You know, again, I'd like to see some of the other players that were there at a young age still there bringing those young players through. So I hope there's not too many gone, and I hope there's not too many young players coming through at the one time. So that's a big balance to get right. But answer your question, but Aidan O'Shea, you know, I think there's a spot in the middle from actually come this game.
Last weekend, the championship started with wins for Leitrim over London and Sligo over New York. Kevin, there feels a gulf, though, within Connacht between Mayo, Galway, Roscommon, and then the other two counties. It's almost as if the teams are looking, they're looking ahead almost. If whoever wins between Galway and Mayo, when you talk to people from those counties, they automatically assume that they're going to play Roscommon in the Connacht final if they win on this Sunday. Is that the way it is?
It is, Paul. That's the way it is. And, you know, as management, you're not that way because you know yourself, you can slip. And so, but it, definitely the feeling around you. And I suppose that's the hardest thing for players is the expectation of their supporters. It's, yeah, look, it's Leitrim or it's Sligo, or, but you might get a tough game, but you get over. That's the kind of perception. That, but to be fair, if you look at the history, bar one or two plays along, that's the way it has been for quite a while. So there's a reason for that. But look, there's no doubt about it. The three teams that you spoke will be more eyeing each other up than anybody else. And I suppose you saw last Sunday that, you know, Sligo, they're coming out of Division 4. They seem to be improving a bit. I watched the game myself last day, and but they were quite lucky. I mean, a ball hit the post there was a minute to go, and it didn't go wide. If it did, they'd be facing the ball again, but they came out and went down and got a point and got a free afterwards, whatever it was. So I don't think that Sligo or Leitrim are ready yet to compete with the big three.
Oshin, was that a club mate of yours training New York?
No, neighbouring club.
Neighbour, yeah.
Johnny McGeaney, yeah. Actually, I think he's a cousin of Geezer's as well. So, lad that's been out there 12 years, been involved in lots and lots of clubs out there, but also he's done a lot at underage development squad. So he's been involved for a long, long time. I'm sure he knows a lot of those players. A lot of those players were home-based players, which was probably a bit of a break from the norm. Obviously, there was a few names from that we would recognise, like Varley and Medane and a few.
Yeah, but loads of lads born in New York, playing for New York.
Yeah, one guy actually, Keelan Mathers, whose dad played with a neighbouring club here as well. So the two Brosnans who are Kerry based originally as well, their dad was, but they are all born in New York. So there's a whole new breed of footballers coming along, and they look quite comfortable in their surroundings, and just be interesting now to get a crack at, you know, Tailteann Cup, and you know, if that's something that can bring them on again. But I like what London have done New York have done eventually, a little bit like London, in that they've gone more for, you know, home based players and players that, you know, have come up through the ranks and come up through the system, and also managers. You know, interesting that, you know, Michael Maher and Johnny are two guys who've been involved in the underage before and have made the progression right through to management. So it seems something that, again, will be long-term will be better for both London and New York.
Can I ask you, the other game last weekend was Tyrone for Manit. Were you impressed with Tyrone?
Yeah, I was suitably impressed with them in that, you know, whenever they really needed to opt it, they opted. And they opted for 15 or 20 minutes and were able to drop off again a little bit. And, you know, I know, you know, there's a worry about the amount of goal chances they give away and stuff, but they just seem to have that extra gear. I mean, I think Kevin made a really good point to start when he said about the gulf between what I've seen personally at Division 1 level and what I've seen even at Division 2 level. And I think, you know, come back to the Galway Mayo one, you know, are Galway properly prepared for, you know, what's coming at them at the weekend, you know, as in playing Division 2 football, just the intensity levels and the quality and that. So, again, you know, Tyrone, you know, had gone through Division 1, Fermanagh Division 3, and the preparations were poles apart. And I just felt as if Tyrone had another couple of levels. And I think, to be honest, Tyrone are in probably a decent place. And, usually in Ulster, whenever you get drawn out in the preliminary round, you go, oh, no, not the preliminary round. But I think this was an occasion where the preliminary round will have done Tyrone absolutely no harm whatsoever.
We're going to run through the fixtures at the weekend and just call a winner. Oisin, you had an outstanding league. Connacht, so you're going for Mayo.
Yeah.
David, who'll win that, Mayo or Galway?
I'll go for Mayo. Should go for Mayo.
Kevin?
I think the Division 2 was very poor this year. I think the Derry match for Galway, 3-8 the first half was superb. If it tells me two things, Galway played well, but Derry mustn't have turned up to a degree. So I'm not sure how much they learned from that. So with the Division 1 experience, I think Mayo are going to be hard to take out.
Okay. The Leinster Football Championship begins this weekend. It's as if it isn't happening. All focus is elsewhere. But there are six counties out for whom these are big games. Oisin, Louth versus Carlow.
Louth, obviously, have had a really good time. But this is a sort of game which has tripped them up in the past. But I just think just a little bit too much quality. And also playing with a nice degree of confidence. And like they're going to be a Division 2 team next year. So I think they feel as if they must step up and win this game. And there's a real focus on this game. So, and they'll be aware of the deficiencies in the past in these games. So Louth for me.
David, who do you think will win between Louth and Louth and Carlow?
I probably have to say Louth as well. They've been building consistently the last couple of years, and I think they're one of those teams that since Mickey Hart comes in, there's been a real consistency in the players. Like you see some of those teams that were Division 3 and 4, there's a good turnover of players year to year, whereas there's consistency, there seems to be good sounds around the place. So I'd definitely go for Louth, yeah.
And Oisin, who do you think will win between Laois and Wicklow?
I actually liked what I seen with Laois at the start of the year. If you think about the Bourne Cup and then you think about the first game against Louth, when they turned them over, and I'm gonna stick with Laois. Just
okay.
About.
And who do you think will win between Wexford and Offaly?
It's an away game for Offaly, which makes
it trickier, but.
I think Offaly, I've seen enough from Offaly, and I think they'll be hurting a little bit by the way the league finished. So I go Offaly to win that one.
David, Laois or Wicklow?
I know there's a bit of turmoil down there in Wicklow, was it? Or the change management. Laois.
Okay, and Offaly Wexford?
Offaly. I like what they're doing.
Okay. Good call. Kevin, Louth and Carlow?
Louth.
Laois and Wicklow?
Laois.
Offaly Wexford?
I told you before, you gave out to me and I told you about Offaly. They weren't going that well. I'm going for a Wexford home win.
I'm nervous about it. There's quite a few injuries. And you called it exactly right about Offaly. Which pains me to say it. There is no game in Munster this weekend. It springs into life with Tipperary against Waterford and Clare v. Limerick next the weekend after next. So we'll come back to that. And as well as Donegal Armagh on Sunday, the previous day, Antrim play Cavan. Oisin, how do you see this game going?
It's probably the trickiest one to call at the weekend, I think. Antrim are helped by the fact that, you know, David talked about teams having a cause. I think Antrim have a bit of a cause in the fact that they nearly had this game taken away from them despite the mammoth effort it took to get Corrigan Park to where it is. Yeah. It's a quite a unique venue. It's a very unique venue. And I think Antrim haven't played there. Cavan won't be used to it. Cavan coming out of Division 4, I thought, less impressive than I would have thought at the start of the year.
Agreed.
I'm going to go for Antrim just to squeak it.
Okay. Kevin, Antrim or Cavan?
Exactly what Oisin said. I have to say, I wasn't impressed with Cavan at all this year. I know they came through in the out Division 4, but I don't believe that's where they should be, or that's where they would have been 2 or 4 years ago. So I just think Cavan are, they're struggling at the minute. So I'm going to give Antrim the vote as well.
And David, where, how do you see it?
Yeah, I think Antrim as well. Just that case, the manager there for the last 2 years, getting players, doing things consistently, keeping the group together. There doesn't seem to be as many turnover of players, and I think that makes a huge difference. There's a good atmosphere around them.
For the first time that we've since we started this podcast, everybody who's offered an opinion has called exactly the same team for each match the whole way down. So it's Mayo, Louth, Laois, Offaly and Antrim to win. So you're either all right or all wrong in all of this. And
Wexford, Paul.
Oh, you call Wexford. That's true. Apologies, Kevin. I'll reframe that.
You don't want to hear it.
So yeah, I suppose I'm in denial over that prospect. The thing to say though is it is great that there is championship football back going again. It is great to be able to go to games and that the world of Gaelic football is opening up again. And the hope has to be that we are in the early stages of what proves to be a huge championship. And I do think it's the most open championship of any All-Ireland that has been played since, well, I will say, since the dawn of the Dubs strong era. I think it's a really open championship. So, Oisin, I'm just going to ask you to call a winner of that championship.
I like what Tyrone are doing. I'm going to go Tyrone.
Okay. Kevin?
I'm going to go with Kerry. A lot on the basis, I think Dublin have come back. They may not need to improve the whole pile. I thought they should have beaten Tyrone last year. I know Tyrone won it. But I'll go Kerry.
David?
I'd have to go with Kerry as well. I think it's not that they're new. They've been there a couple of years. They're probably flattered to deceive. But Jack O'Connor in charge, even you've seen the type of players he was pulling out in there. Was it the McGrath Cup games? Like there's a different atmosphere around them. I think it's theirs to win this year.
Can anyone from Connacht win the All-Ireland?
I think it's a big ask for Mayo, if I'm honest. And I wouldn't count Galway in the picture so much. Big ask for Mayo, I suppose form-wise, injury-wise, but amazingly, if you get up near a semi-final, if they can go through the front door, win Connacht, decent draw in a quarter-final, I think anything can happen. The team seems to develop and move on very quickly. I think he used the league wisely. He was just trying to get one or two more players. There was huge chopping and changing. A lot of fellas got game time looking for that real strong, athletic-type player. And if you can add a few more of them in, he's probably looking for having 22, 23 players that he can pick at any stage. He's probably found one or two, maybe Jack Kearney's one. Jordan Flynn, I suppose, is a loss. I suppose he really developed. But you just don't know. Get to Croke Park, Mayo seem to be a different team at times.
Kevin, anyone from Mayo win the All-Ireland? Or anyone from Connacht win the All-Ireland?
I think it's going to be a big ask because I think both of them have new players. And I'm not so sure where they're at. Going with the league finals, I don't think either of them were All-Ireland winners by those two. And that's the last one we can go by. I think both teams actually wanted to win the games. Because what you say, Galway wanted to win that game and so did Mayo. So I'm not going to make any excuses. They'll have a lot of improvement to win All-Ireland.
I want to finish. I know it's a Gaelic football show.
Paul, can we get you on record? Because last year, you just kept chopping and changing, and then what about 5 minutes to go in the All Ireland final? You said Tyrone. Can we get you on record this year, please?
I think I texted you when the fourth official put up the board to say that I fancy Tyrone for this one. I think Dublin will win the All Ireland. That's who I think will do it.
Now I know why you kept chopping and changing.
Yeah. Well, if the evidence changes, I'll change my mind later in the year. But I'd like to see a bit of football first, and it'll depend on what Dublin do. I do want to finish on a non-GA related matter. Oisin, how are you after United last night?
this is as bad as it's ever been.
Are you okay, though? Are you okay?
Not really, no. It was an absolute, it's an absolute mess from top to. I think the only thing is, Paul, me and you need to get over there, sort it out, put a few zeros on our paychecks and see if we can get to the bottom of it. But like, when you listen to Neville and Keane and Souness and Carragher last night, it just tells you how bad it is. And when you see City and Liverpool playing, it just shows you how far you have to go. And then you have the decision as a United supporter to see which team you want to win the league.
I know. It's City, like, go on, answer.
City or Liverpool. I can't bring myself to answer it. But probably would go down on considering the amount of Liverpool supporters that are around me and annoy me on a consistent basis, probably City.
Yeah. It's such a choice. It's such a disaster.
It's like choosing your favorite child.
Yeah. Yeah. And in that, just one last question on that. Is there any Man United player in the who that you would keep in the squad?
Well, we're probably going to have to keep some of them, but
De Gea, no. Would you keep De Gea?
As a backup.
Yeah.
As a backup for Robinson, probably. But other than that, they're a mess. I mean, Pogba, don't get me started on Pogba.
But he had a serious injury last night, in fairness to him. He went to war last night.
And I have to say, he probably decided about Friday evening that he was going to have that injury, and he knew in his head at what stage he was going to come off. He's a disgrace altogether. But anyhow.
David, when you look at soccer goalkeepers, and you look at David De Gea, or you look at the way the modern soccer goalkeeper has changed, did you bring any of that into Gaelic football?
The soccer goalkeepers changed. Not sure that I bring it. Like, I think it's only really coming in now, the playmaking aspect of it. From my playing time, I think I was very orthodox. I didn't come too far out.
Oh, hold on now, hold on now. I watched the Mayo quarterfinal last year, and I had the sight of David Clark going by the midfield. What happened there?
Yeah, I'm trying to learn like the rest of them now. I'm trying to learn like the rest of them. Yeah, it's definitely changing. Yeah, there's times you will have a go.
Why did you end up being a goalie?
Probably last picked, I think, in the yard, if I'm being honest. But I don't know. I liked it. Peter Schmeichel was the man of my time. He was the thing, and I think it was just something that's in you. I'm just all goalkeeper. Didn't have any real interest playing outfield. I might have played one game under 10 or something, or under 8, and I've been in goal since. I think I was one of these young fellas. I was able to dive on concrete in a yard, and I wasn't able to get hurt. So I started going from then. But I was awful lucky in the club. A couple of my first coaches and school teachers were goalkeepers or former goalkeepers, and there was probably a bit of pushing in that direction. Don't really remember it, but that must have got something to do with it. But yeah, the game is definitely changing. You can see it developing. I'm still not 100% sure about the outfield players converting back. I think it's, I'm not sure if you can win All-Ireland with that. If you looked back through the years, there's been big moments in games, like in finals, there might be only one shot or two shots, and you might need your goalkeeper to make that save. And it kind of annoys me sometimes. You can see the fellas that are converted, the way they make an effort to save the ball, it just doesn't look right. And maybe it's goalkeeper snobbery, but it looks like that they just don't have the movement.
Can you look at somebody and say, look, there's a natural goalkeeper, or there's someone who's been at this a long time, as against someone who's converted?
Yeah. Well, you might be able to see that. Some of it is not even if they make the save, the way they try to make the save. But I think one of my first coaches said to me, and I remember it kind of stuck with me, that maybe to be a Gaelic goalkeeper, it's not about the save it, really. It's about consistency and, you know, any ball that comes into you, catch it. Any ball that you get, give a good pass out. Move down to kickouts then. But when you get to the real top level, the way teams are playing now, trying to win All-Ireland, there is goal chances given up on the opposite end. You cannot park the bus and they're not going to concede a goal opportunity and try and win a game. So that there is going to be one or two chances in a game. And I suppose Stephen Cluxton, was it a number of years ago in Kerry, he made a few excellent saves in the final and probably got them through the first day, helped them win the second day. And it's you will be probably found out. But I suppose it could be the high deficiency.
Do you have a friendship with Stephen Cluxton?
I would have only met him once or twice out socially, and in fairness to him, very engaging and like talking goalkeeping. I was trying to pick his brain. He was telling me he was playing soccer on Sundays, and he was playing, I don't know, that handball or squash. Like he'd talk to you. Yeah, very nice fella, but I wouldn't know him personally. Wouldn't have his number or anything like that. But he'd definitely engage if you met him out. There might be a few beers involved now.
And did you consciously imitate things that him or that other goalkeepers did?
Did I imitate them? I was always learning. Yeah, that would be like maybe the first thing. If I was watching a game, maybe on playback, I'd nearly just watch the goalkeeper's kickouts. Like the big thing for me was the kickouts, trying to change my kickout style, trying to, you know, learn. I was lucky with Rob Henley. He had a lovely strike and style, so I was trying to learn off him. But it took me a while to actually realise you can only be as good as what God has given you. You can get a bit better at it, whereas you kind of try and be a copycat. You find out what you're good at, try and get a bit better at that, maybe develop a small few things. But like there was periods when I was trying to do things I'm probably just not able to do, so I had to probably get into my mind what I can and like can't do.
What do you mean by that?
Like the way the game went for a while, it was pinging fellas on the run 40-50 yards. I was trying to do them and the ball was hanging and the fellow was being put under awful pressure. So for a while there, my game changed to get out as quick as I could, get the ball in the tee and just get it moving within 3 or 4 seconds. We had a team that was full of runners. Maybe that was around me too. That was the type of team we had. I probably shied away for a good number of years going for those maybe arrows out to the wing. Probably wasn't what I was good at. But when I realised that and the team realised that, we were able to, you know, accommodate that side of me. It's different than if a different goalkeeper. I find it strange when people bring in a goalkeeper and they expect one fellow to do the same as the other. You know, everyone has different attributes, but that was something for me.
How did you get on with Rob Henley?
Yeah, good. We were a room together for years. Probably very different characters, you know. I'd be a bit quieter, he'd be a lot more outgoing, but yeah, got on well. Very much huge competition between us, which was probably great, but at the same time...
Was it though? What was it great?
Looking back on it, I often wonder if I had been the undisputed number one, would I have, you know, been able to work on these things? Maybe that arrow kick out, maybe different things. But I think when I played my best football, I was under huge pressure. I was probably only coming in halfway through the year. I was, every training session that I was at, it was like, geez, if I do bad here tonight, I could be gone out of the team. Like I felt like I was under huge pressure all the time. But that's when I ended up playing some of my best football. Whereas a couple of years before that, maybe the competition wasn't as intense and probably didn't help me raise my standards, probably didn't help me look at my game. So I tell you one thing, it was mentally draining. But at the same time, when you play well, you've got that bit of enjoyment. Now, I wouldn't have liked to have done, you know, maybe there's another side of it as well. If you are that undisputed player, you have a bit more confidence. But for me, anyway, I there was a weird enjoyment out of it.
So I know myself playing at a totally different level at club that I didn't do well with doubt. I needed no doubt as to whether I will be playing or not. And were you the same, Oisin?
I never really went through that period during my career until right at the end.
Yeah.
And then I had I'd gone from knowing that I was going to play and to be playing to knowing that I wasn't going to be playing. And I couldn't really handle that end of things. I don't know, it was insecurity or what it was, but I just, you know, I got away from it then because I wouldn't have been able to handle it. I knew that my reaction wouldn't have been good enough for me or the team around me. And there's only so much putting a brave face on things I could have done. And I did 12 months of it. And after that, then I knew it was gone for me, to be honest. So I like the certainty, and I like David talks about the certainty, but I like the certainty, and I also like the responsibility. I like the free kicks. I like the penalties, all that sort of thing. So,
but David, I'm particularly thinking of that All Ireland final that ended in a draw, and you played very well. And then the replay, you're out. How did that feel like?
Not great, I suppose. I was kind of funny though. I was probably at a stage there. I was, you know, quite mature earlier on that year. You know, we used to have different people in with us. You know, I don't know, the psychologists or people that helps you with your head and thoughts. Like, but earlier on that year, I remember you kind of had to give yourself over to everything. Like, I didn't start at the start of those years. I only came in, I think, was it after the first championship game? Like, so I had been out of the team. I think I played one league match. So I was, and then I got a run of games, obviously. But I was probably definitely at a stage where it was about a bit more about the team. Now, look, don't get me wrong. When the manager told me I was fucking and blinding and I was throwing things and I was shouting to myself, but you know, a few hours later, you know, you try and dust yourself down and you go into the group, and basically, it can't be about you. Like, I was probably quite lucky in a way, quite reserved. I never showed much emotion either way, so I was able to get away with things feeling disappointed. But I definitely knew that if I let myself down, and I was called upon in that game, that if I didn't prepare myself right, like, it's a scary place to be going into a game if something did happen to a goalkeeper and you weren't in the right frame of mind. So that was my first thing. And that's probably pure selfishness. If anything goes wrong here and I have to come on, that I need to be to right. So I don't, you know, make matters completely worse. But yeah, it wasn't great, but decision was made, as explained to me, and you get on with it. Like, there was murmurings and there was whispers around the place after the first game. You know, there was a few kickouts went wrong and there was, you know, pressure on kickouts. It was the time, no matter what kickout either one of us made, it was good or bad, or the other one could be better. But it didn't work out in the end anyway for the team. We still didn't win, but
you've mentioned a few times there about that you were reserved, but you, every time there seemed to be a Mayo press night before an All-Ireland final, you were the one who was put out. You were often put out. Why is that?
Yeah, probably a bit of that reason, that I was quite reserved. Look, I looking back on it now, I probably feel sorry for some of the reporters that were going to those things, because there was probably two or three people put out there to say nothing to them, and it was hard to get any type of story out of anybody.
Were you ever told what to say before those nights? Were you ever told, you know, here's our line, this is what we're saying?
You were given a few pointers. Pretty much, I think it's the same with every team. You know, the other team are good. We still think we can win. You know, good belief in the atmosphere, in the group, atmosphere in the group, the process. All these words. You know, you probably had a few of them in your head going out. But I suppose I was at a stage too, and a lot of them. Whereas I wouldn't have had a major social media, you know, any type of social media. I wouldn't have any endorsements. Like, I wasn't really getting anything out of it. It wasn't really doing anything for me. Doing that, whereas, wasn't really a distraction. If I went on, it wasn't really going to benefit my job. It wasn't really going to benefit my endorsements. So, like, it was one of those things. Like, don't get me wrong, I didn't really like doing them. I wouldn't be a real, you know, speaker out in public. It wouldn't be something that I'd get me kicks off. But if it was something I could do for the team, if I was asked to do the job, like, there was times I was put out. I wasn't even playing. Like, I was sub, and it's nearly embarrassing for everyone. But you went out there and you were one of the numbers, and you gave your spiel and you came off, and hopefully nothing blew up the next day that you're giving the other team a cause. But I definitely felt sorry. I met some of those reporters and journalists on a couple of All-Star tours, and like, you're talking to them and you're nearly embarrassing what you were trying to say to them. They're only trying to do a job too. And in fairness to them, I don't think any of the fellas I've met, you know, all good guys, they're never trying to really catch you out. But that was the time and the way.
I wait to say nothing. Oisín, were you ever trusted on a press night?
Yeah, no, I would have done. I would have done quite a few press nights. It was probably slightly different, you know, for the majority of my career, in that Gaze could ring you up and arrive at the house, or meet you somewhere and spend a couple hours with you and do like a full piece with you. And I think those days are sort of gone now, where the most of what journalists are getting is sitting down at some sort of event or before an All-Ireland final or whatever it is. So yeah, the things would have changed a little bit. I would have been a lot more open to you know, to meeting lads, or lads coming to the house, or different things. I would have got to know a lot of those journalists, you know, down through the years, and as I say, I would have been as open as I possibly could be without being stupid about it. Because I remember I got a harsh lesson the first championship match I played, our journalist asked me to what I really thought about Tyrone, Tyrone's full back line off the record. And I said I thought they were absolutely horrendous, and I thought I thought that I would have a field day against them. And it was my first, it was my debut for Armagh, and I remember Adrian Cush coming running up the pitch to tell Paul Devlin, who wasn't somebody who held back anyway, that was he aware of what I'd said about him in the paper, and that was the first I knew that the stuff that was off the record was on the record, and I paid a fairly hefty price for it physically from then until the end of the game. So I think that was a good learning for me early on, but it didn't deter me away from, you know, speaking to media, and that I've always felt it was fairly open, and I enjoyed that end of things, because I also felt that whenever, you know, those occasions or there was press around, those cameras around, I just felt it actually focused the mind, because you knew the games were getting bigger and the attention on the games were getting bigger, and there was a bigger onus on you to perform, and I like that end of things.
I used to came at it from a kind of different angle, playing club football in Offaly. I was a reporter for the local paper and had to report on matches that I was playing in. And we beat Eden Derry, and everyone knew I was doing it, so I had to have a bit of fun with it. We beat Eden Derry, who were then county champions in the first round of the championship, second round of the championship, and I put in a line about myself: "Come at the hour, come at the man."
I love it.
And it, yeah, it caused a small bit of problems for myself, but yeah. Anyway, I think we'll leave it there. Thank you to Larry Ryan for running this podcast, to Raf Rocca, to Jack Neville, to Tony Lean, and to everyone at Examiner Sport. A huge thanks to Oisin, and especially to David Clark and to Kevin Walsh for joining us today. We'll be back soon.
A grain of rice is going to tip the scale. Just remember that.
There's a small bit of a needle there.
Come on, Mayo, you've got to get Andy Moran into the game. Listen, and now they're really roaring.
And I can tell you, that there won't be a cold milk how declare for at least a week.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free. Or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.